That's some music from ABC there when Smokey sings, a tribute to Smokey Robinson. And if you're wondering why we have music on, it's because we've been getting the studio sorted out, because I have in the studio with me the incoming president and vice president of the IFA. Now, you're thinking to yourself, and what you're thinking, whoa, those elections haven't come on yet. How do you know you have the incoming president and vice president? Because in both cases, we have both candidates with us. Delighted to say that there was a major hustings meeting on in Donegal last night, and all of the candidates were present, and they presented their perspectives and their wares to the members of the IFA in Donegal. And I'm delighted to say that they have all come to join us in studio this morning. So we are talking this morning to Martin Stapleton, a dairy farmer from Limerick, and a beef and sheep farmer, Francie Gorman from County Laois. They are both contesting the presidency of the IFA. Gentlemen, you're both very welcome.
Thank you.
And also joined by Alice Doyle from Wexford and Pat Murphy from Galway, who are contesting the vice presidency of the organisation. Alice and Pat, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
A pleasure to speak to all of you. A good night in Donegal last night. We'll start with you, Martin. It was a good night in Donegal, I take it, last night?
Absolutely. Great opportunity for all of us, I think, to get to listen to the concerns of the members in Donegal, to get a really strong understanding of all the issues that are relevant up here. Great discussion had, great questions asked, and really, really good meeting, positive meeting.
And Francie, you all know each other. You've all been involved in the senior echelons of the IFA. It's a big organisation, but it's not that big that you don't all know each other. There are no strangers at this table, and I suppose you're spending a lot of time together these days with so many hustings and meetings like this taking place.
Absolutely. It's the last probably of 15, I think, unless there's one in Kerry. And before that, we knew each other really well from working together in council anyway.
Alice, as the only lady who's contesting senior office on this occasion, important from your point of view that there is variety at the top of the IFA's organisation. I mean, I think we have spoken to you before in your in the context of your role in the executive. Important that your voice and the voice of women in the IFA is heard more strongly?
Yes, it is. I think, you know, a balance is very important no matter what you do. No matter what you do in life, you must see that. And I think it's good to bring a balance in. We have different opinions, different views, but I think it's the, you know, the way we bring that together. And in every around every kitchen table, in every household and in every farming family and every farming community, there's a woman. It's the mother, it's the grandmother, it's the wife, it's the sister, whichever one, which is contributing to the running of the farm. And I think it would be no harm to see that balance brought into our national table as well. So it's all about, you know, what replicating what goes on around the kitchen table, that we bring that now to national level, and I think we can bring that balance to the table.
And Pat, from your own point of view, Pat Murphy, the other contestant for the vice presidency from Galway originally, Pat, and I suppose, you know, someone from Galway is going to be in Donegal and saying, well, look, I have a west-northwest perspective, you know, that I can bring, and I have something to offer here as well.
That's for sure, and I've, lucky enough, I have family in Donegal, so I have a good awareness of the challenges that farmers in Donegal are facing, and from, we'll say, a lot of them will tell you we're isolated up here, we're not being listened to. So to have that West of Ireland aspect, that certainly we are able to listen, we are willing to listen, and we're willing to be a voice for the farmers here.
Martin, the issues that were discussed last night, I'm sure there's a lot of issues at the moment. A lot of discussion right now about climate change and how farmers are expected to make changes in order to meet targets. A lot of perception, a lot of belief among farmers that perhaps the targets they're being asked to meet, particularly in the dairy, and a lot of discussion about dairy in the past couple of weeks, actually. A lot of talk about that maybe are farmers being given too much of a responsibility here and asked to do too much in terms of addressing it?
I think there's widespread agreement amongst farmers that the way the obligations around climate change are being interpreted treats the entire agricultural industry unfairly. We all know in society at large that we have to make changes from a point of view of environmental protection, from a point of view of de-risking the change to the climate. We have agreements signed up to, we have legislation now, we have to reduce our emissions by 25%. And we in agriculture have a very clear plan to get us at least 80% of the way there. And we've gone about implementing that plan with vigour. We have an expectation, and a very credible expectation, that new technologies in the coming 4 or 5 years will allow us to close the gap to get to the 100% that is to reduce by 25%, which is our 100% of our obligation. So within the agricultural sector, when it comes to climate change, we really are playing our part. We have a credible plan and we're determined to succeed in that. But the final point I make you is too much of the commentary that goes on in our national airways, in our social media, in all forms of conversations, disproportionately blame agriculture for their lack of awareness. And I think that's because many of us think that agriculture is seen as a soft option.
Francie, from your point of view, it's said very often that no one knows the land better than farmers do. No one understands the land better than farmers do. And a lot of farmers say to us here in Donegal, look, give us the targets and then leave us do this ourselves, because we know what we're doing way better than someone at a desk in the department in Dublin does.
I think that's fair comment. I mean, the 25% figure is very challenging. The Chagas Mac curve says we might get to 17 or 18% if every farmer adopted 100% of the measures needed to get us there. So it's a leap of faith to see how far we can get towards the 25%. And the issue I have with it is it's the cost that it's going to incur. Farmers are going to incur trying to meet those challenges. And we see it already through stealth they're trying to do it with. All various schemes, they're trying to, make land availability more expensive. And if farmers will meet the challenges, we always have had, we've always adopted best practices that were, directed to us by Chagas over the years. And this will be no different. We've got to be given time to make sure that the measures we've taken on farm presently are seen to be working. And we've got to get the supports from government to help us reach our targets as well, because they're putting the supports into other sectors. And at the moment, it seems like farmers are the only ones been asked to pay for it out of their own pockets.
Alice, I want to go to you. Farm incomes, a very big issue. I'm sure it was a big issue at the meeting here in Donegal last night as well. It's one that the IFA is constantly meeting with the minister on, is constantly discussing. And when we have further cap reform under discussion, we know Charlie McConnellogh is presenting a very comprehensive document to Europe in the coming weeks. Have you any confidence that the farm income issue is going to improve in the coming weeks and months?
We would hope it would. Look, this has been a particularly bad year all around because, first and foremost, you have the income from the crops, from milk, from beef. Everything this year has been down from a very good year last year. So you have the immediate effect of having a very bad bad year from a point of view of income from that because of the harvest, etc. But we also have the income been based on cap, our cap payments that are coming. That has all changed this year as well. There is a different way of getting our money. It's coming in two different lots. It comes under the BIS and it's coming under the environmental section. So again, the BIS is down for a lot of people, depending on whether they're up or down on convergence. But for a lot of people, they have lost out quite a bit on that because of convergence. And then on the other section, you have where on the environmental side, depending on what schemes you're in, how much you can get out of that. So again, if you're in a lot of the schemes and you're able to qualify for those, you will have a certain amount of income. But income is always a problem. And we're depending on it from the marketplace. And as I said, from the marketplace this year, it's down anyway. And then we're depending on it from schemes coming from Europe and from our own national government. So we would be hoping that, where possible, that where the marketplace isn't meeting it, that some of the schemes will be able to give a certain amount of income to people. But I do know from the farm family point of view, that farm families are suffering greatly because unless they have an off-farm income at this stage, an awful lot of them are finding it very hard to make a living, particularly from the income from the marketplace. So again, everything that Charlie McConnell can bring back to us from Europe and any plans going forward that way, they're always very welcome because they're going to be necessary. We even have things like, I know here in Donegal, it's, schemes like Farm Assist are absolutely essential to farms in order to keep them bread on the table, let alone, have money to invest in farms.
And Pat Murphy, a lot of talk about the fair deal at the moment. From the farmer's perspective, given what's on the table, is it fair?
From our personal point of view, we'd have questions about it. It's not suitable to every family. Certainly a lot of work has gone into it down the years from an IFA point of view, and it's a lot fairer and more open than it was. But it's not for every family, and my advice to people is your family is unique. Make sure that you get the financial advice and the legal advice before you make any decision on it, because once you sign that line, there's no going back. So make sure that you know what you're doing before you go in it. But it's certainly, from the work that IFA has put in with the last 10, 12 years, it's a lot better than it was, but there are still depending on your family situation, you have to look at your own family situation first.
I want to ask all four of you about the minister, because obviously Charlie McConlogue is a representative for this particular county. He comes from a spot just about 40 minutes up the road from here. And I'm going to start with you, if I may, Martin. What's the relationship like at the moment between IFA and Charlie McConlogue, and between you personally and Charlie McConlogue? Because he'll be the minister probably for another year, perhaps a little longer, but we're talking an election probably sort of late, early autumn next year is probably the most likely, if not before. So if you are elected, I mean, you know, what will your relationship with Charlie McConlogue be like?
I'm very much a person that believes that relationships between people are important, professional relationships, but I do so on an issue-by-issue basis. I mean, I've been very critical in the past couple of months, for example, on the Minister for facilitating delayed payments to farmers this year. I think that's something that when the Minister looks back in his career, he will say he made a mistake, he did not prioritise something that was intrinsically important to farmers. But should that dispute, for example, or any other dispute that we have, should that come between us or impede our ability to make progress on any issue in the future? Absolutely it should not. With the President of the IFA, officers in IFA will always work with the Minister on an issue-by-issue basis, regardless of what went on before on the previous issue or whatever issue is likely to come down the line.
And Francie Gorman, I mean, from your own point of view, is Charlie McConlogue a man with whom, if elected, you could do business?
Absolutely. I know him quite well. I have a good personal relationship with him and a good business working relationship with him. I know some of his team really well, and it's important. It's important that those relationships continue, you know, that we foster those relationships. Without doubt, negotiation has always to be the first place we start if we want delivery. And there's an onus on us as an organisation to be more proactive in how we put forward our ideas, you know, and take ownership of them, get them in under the table, get in under the table with the department, get those ideas put into policy. And then, if we're not happy, be prepared and be strong enough to walk out. But whoever is Minister for Agriculture on the given day, we have to always seek to work with them. And there's no doubt that on delayed payments and the nitrates directive and supports for schemes, you could be critical of them. But I'd also be critical, more critical of, from a farmer's point of view, Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin. They were parties that farmers would traditionally have voted for and expect that they would support agriculture. And for me, they've sold out agriculture by doing the deal with the Green Party in the last government more than anybody.
Pat Murphy, from your own point of view, Charlie McConlogue, I'm sure you've met him several times already, you know, in the context of your work with IFA. Looking into the future, I mean, you know, you can work with him?
I can actually get on well with the man. Met him last Saturday at the Macra conference in Ballinasloe, had a good conversation with him. And when I say I get on well with him, I can also have the conversation and say, Minister, you've let farmers down here. But I think that the Minister is in a practically impossible position when you have the green element in government hampering any, we'd say, working relationship that you can have with farmers on the ground. And like, we haven't been slow in telling them, like, Minister, people, farmers' incomes, families' incomes are hurting. Like, the Suckler Cow Scheme was one example that I think that he was important to get in there, but there is no options for farmers in it. The vaccination, I would have loved to have seen in it. The testing for IBR, I question the need for that, and I question them in Tullamore at the Tullamore Show about that. He gave us an answer, but I still think that when you give farmers options that are better, I think, on the ground, you're always giving a better scheme. So while I get on with them, I'm well able to question them, and I think we have questioned them in the past, as we did last Saturday.
And that is from your own point of view. Obviously, you have a special perspective on the farm families and the wider issue that go beyond maybe the economic and the schemes as such. Your assessment of Charlie McConlogue?
I've met the gentleman on numerous occasions. I find him very easy to talk to. But he understands family too. He's a family man himself, and he understands that, and he understands the farm family. But I do know, like, every minister goes in with the intention of doing their very best in the situation, and I'd say he has tried to do his very best. Whether that's good enough is another question, and whether it has met the needs of the people that he serves is another question. I certainly find I could work with him very easily because I think he's very approachable. He will be with us, I presume, for nearly another year. So I do think it's in all our interest that we keep that door open, that we work with him, that we work with him and his officials, because his officials are equally important, and he is the one who will have the door open to those officials for us. So, and I think he will be willing to do that. Having said all of that, there are moments when I could criticise that maybe he didn't listen to us as often as he should have had. He did his rounds back a year and a half ago talking to us, and I think he talked to us. I'm not so sure that he listened to us. So I'd question that. And I would say certainly in some areas, when he looks back on his own career, like all of us, when we look back over our career and our time, there are things we would have done differently. And I think he will look at that and he'll say, yes, maybe he could have done better under the circumstances. But then I don't think anyone goes in with the intention of doing badly. So I would hope that for the next year, he does have a year left, that he will work with us as we will work with him to deliver what we need for farmers.
Farmer wellbeing is a big discussion, a lot of discussion on mental health and people under pressure, and very often farmers are people who are under pressure given all that's happening around. Francie, farmer wellbeing, IFA has a huge role here, doesn't it, in terms of promoting farmers' own wellbeing as well as their economic wellbeing, as well as their well-being in the other areas of farming. You have a responsibility to them personally as well, don't you?
We do indeed, and we take that responsibility very seriously from the top down, particularly the Farm Family Committee, of which Alice is chair. And we should always seek to try and do more, and certainly we probably could do more in maybe peer-to-peer helping out farmers, making sure that neighbours keep an eye on people down the road from, and keep an eye out for somebody that you might think is vulnerable in some shape or form. It could be for any reason, and not be slow to seek help. And there is help through the organisation, through the likes of Pietra House. You can go directly to profession as well, but absolutely it's something we take very, very seriously.
Martin, issues of inheritance and succession are important issues in farming at the moment as well. Obviously, IFA keeps in contact with all levels of government. Does more need to be done to tighten up the laws to look at this legally, or are these issues that can be resolved elsewhere?
Well, first of all, I think that one of the things I've learned over the last 3 months is that succession is an absolutely massive issue for farmers all over the country, in all parts of the country, in all different sectors. There's a deficit now of young people coming into the industry as a whole, and farmers are worried about that. And then when you get into the succession issues, I personally believe that there's not enough incentives. And incentives, by previous standards, are pretty good, but there's still not enough incentives for young people. There's not enough certainty. Combined with what I spoke about earlier was the negative commentary. That's putting people off the lack, because they have a sense of a lack of getting into an industry that's seen as a positive industry. They have a sense of a lack of financial security going forward because of the notion that too many people want us to cut back. So there's huge issues here, a huge job of work to be done for the next team of leadership in the IFA. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely crucial that we get the whole succession industry right. And just to make one final point, and one that comes up on a regular basis, is the notion of people wanting to get or have the opportunity to sign a prenuptial agreement. I think we're going to have to look at that as a society, where a couple coming together think that it's appropriate for them to put a legal prenuptial agreement in place. I think that's something that you should be facilitating in doing, if that's what they choose to do.
Another huge important issue is farm safety. I want to go to you, Pat. The farm safety issue is one that has to be continually discussed, really, isn't it? I mean, an IFA, again, has a huge role here in promoting it.
We have to keep talking about it. Like, we have an onus on ourselves and our families to make sure that our yards are safe. And the only way we'll do it is by keep talking about it, keep highlighting it, keep putting it out there in the conversation, because there's no point talking about it when something happens and we lose someone in a community that's very close to us, or close. Like, when a family loses somebody, it's a desperate event in life to happen. That's too late to talk about at that time. We need to keep talking about it, because there's aspects on our farm, even today, on any of our farms, no matter how clean it is, if somebody else had walked in wouldn't know the danger that we kind of take for granted. Them are the hidden dangers that we have to identify and eradicate on our farms every day. And we're all guilty of that. There's no farm 100% safe today. If any of us walked into a stranger's yard, the possibility is that there is something that we could walk into or trip over. Those are the everyday events that we need to keep talking about and just tell people we can always do better. And there's a need for it to do better, because it may not be a death. It could be an accident that incapacitates somebody for a long period of time. And when you're out of action and you're suffering in pain, you really know then that I should have done something there. And if I had the chance back, I wouldn't let that happen again. We have to look into the future and take those actions now.
Alice, before you wrap, sustainability is a huge issue in agriculture, as it is elsewhere. And I suppose for farmers, sustainability has got to be at the root of what you're doing, because if your practices compromise your crops for next year or your animals for next year or whatever, you're going to be in difficulty. So sustainability has got to really be at the root of agriculture, doesn't it?
You're absolutely correct. It's the bottom line. And as you said, if we're not sustainable, there's no point in doing all the other things, because we've nothing left. We have to be able to have an income. We have to be able to survive. We have to be able to provide an income for our farms. Because if not, we won't have a family there. And sustainability within the rural communities is absolutely huge, because if farming isn't sustainable, the rural community isn't sustainable. And that has a huge ripple effect. I worked in the rural communities all my life. I was teaching as well as farming. And I worked in rural schools. And I can tell you, you know, the impact that the local farming community has on that area. So if the farming community isn't sustainable going forward, you will have this ripple effect that will destroy the rural areas. And whereas we take it for granted, and it was during COVID, you know, people saw the advantage of the rural areas and how important they were to us, everything in it. And they realised also the importance of the farmers' contribution to that rural community in every sense. So I think going forward, it's going to absolutely be essential that we are sustainable. And to be sustainable, we have to be financially sustainable in order to stay there. And if that happens, then we will have a sustainable community going forward as farmers and as a rural community, which in turn leads to a stable environment, I suppose, within our whole, yeah, in our whole country, really.
We're joined in studio by the presidential and vice presidential candidates for the IFA, those elections taking place shortly. Their 15th, you said, hustings last night took place in Donegal, and there are those elections coming up. I want to finish by giving each of you 30 seconds to introduce yourself and just put it on the line. You have 30 seconds to speak to the people of Donegal and put out your own particular stall, as it were. I'm going to start with Martin Stapleton, dairy farmer from Limerick and one of the candidates for the presidency of the IFA. Martin, 30 seconds, the floor is yours.
Okay, I operate a fourth generation family farm in Oula, County Limerick. For the last 4 years I've been treasurer of the IFA. For the 4 years before that I was the chairman of the Farm Business Committee. Throughout my 8 years I believe I've delivered in spades for farmers, supports through the different budgets. We talked about resilience there a minute ago. As treasurer I facilitated a call to every member of the IFA in the really dark days of COVID. I want to deliver a plan which allows us to renew IFA on the basis of respect for farmers, renewing the unity of farmers, ensuring farmers have the freedom to farm, and finally maintaining farm incomes and making sure that the supports that come to farmers are distributed appropriately. I ask people to trust me with their vote to allow me to be the next president. Thank you.
Francie Gorman, beef and sheep farmer from County Laois. Floor is yours.
Yeah, I've been involved in IFA for 25 years. I've served in various different roles, county secretary, farm business chair, county chair in Laois, currently regional chair of IFA for South Leinster. I know the organisation inside out. I know the issues that affect farmers. I'm proactive in how I go about doing my business. I'm a team player, and I believe that if we get our policies right and we can bring farmers with us as one unified body, we can deliver for farmers. And that's my aim if elected president of IFA, and I'd ask people to support me over the coming month in the various branch votes and postal votes around the country.
We also have the two candidates for the vice presidency of the IFA. We'll start with Pat Murphy.
Thanks. My name is Pat Murphy. I'm a suckler and dairy farmer. I live in Ardrahan, County Galway. I'm a family man. I'm married to Anna, and we have three children in college, Kira, Eva and Porrick. And I suppose having three children in college, I know the real challenges that families are facing at the minute. As a full-time farmer, depending on farming, I have that stone in the shoe that so many people across Donegal have as well. The experience I have, I've 20 years representing farmers. I've 12 years experience in National Council, which is most of any of the candidates here as well, I might add. So I bring that experience with me, and we've been through the hard times and we've come up through the ranks in IFA.
And finally, from Wexford, Alice Doyle.
Married to Tom Doyle, a farming partnership with him and our beef and tillage farm in North County Wexford. Have three grown-up children who all work off-farm. I have two worked off-farm as well as farming at home and now farm full-time at home with Tom. I believe I bring a difference to IFA this time, first because I'm a female, I suppose, but secondly because I bring a skill set that nobody else brings to the table. I have two most important traits that are needed for very strong leadership of a big organisation like IFA. I have in-depth knowledge of farming both inside and outside the kitchen door, and I also have leadership skills that come from working in numerous organisations and working off-farm and leading. I've been a member of numerous organisations and have led other organisations right up to national level in Machina Pharma as well. So I think I bring that leadership skill as well as a different balance to the table, and I think that makes all the difference.
Martin Stapleton, Francie Gorman, Pat Murphy, Alice Doyle, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Time on Highland Radio is 27 minutes to 12 noon. A few of your comments before we move on. I don't think Letterkenny Hospital should be told when the minister is going to visit. I've seen all this before. When Mary Harney was health minister, there was cleaning and scrubbing, etc. before her visit. The minister should just turn up unannounced and see firsthand what's going on. Well done to Greg and Highland Radio for highlighting this. If we were relying on the national media, we would hear nothing about this issue. That is the strength of local radio. The strength of Highland Radio is that Highland Radio can reflect and look at national issues in a way that others perhaps cannot. Now, let's one or two more comments. I want to just mention, by the way, Hours to Protect this week is focused on water pollution. Donna Marie Doherty talks to Irla Moran from Irish Water about the Think Before You Flush campaign. We'll also speak to Geraldine Walsh from Donegal Seabead about an agriculture runoff. Find out more at 12:30 on Hours to Protect, less than an hour away from now. Caller says, I got an email saying it's a summons from police with a box saying click here. I know it's a scam, just let listeners know. Yep, absolutely. Caller says, my defective block affected home is full of wood lice. Damp is a big issue because of wool insulation sucking moisture in. And let's move on to our next topic. We are going to speak about flooding. Dozens of flood relief schemes identified as necessary to protect homes and property have yet to get off the drawing board more than 5 years after they were prioritised for investment. They include a number of schemes in Donegal. There are 14 schemes needed in the county. Six are at stage one, one is at stage two, and four are classified as future schemes. Buncrana and Burntfoot are at stage one. Two others in Letterkenny and Donegal Town have been selected as pilot projects for a new approach, and that was announced, you may recall, a few months back by Minister Patrick O'Donovan. Now, Carolyn O'Doherty is environment correspondent with the Irish Independent, and she has been looking very carefully at this whole issue of flood schemes and the delays in them. She joins us on the line. Caroline, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to speak to you, Caroline. And this is a big point of discussion, obviously, in Donegal. There were huge floods, particularly in the Inishowen area in 2017, and the reverberations from those floods still exist to this day. And some of the worst affected areas, Burntfoot and Buncrana, still at stage one. So it will be probably 10 years after the major floods before these relief schemes come into place and are actually up and running. And local people are always saying this, asking the same question. When is this going to happen? Why are there so many delays?
That's right. And they could be saying that with a Donegal accent or a Cork accent or a Wexford accent because, you know, certainly in the last few weeks, it's been brought back to, I suppose, the forefront of our attentions again, you know, how many particular towns that are very, very vulnerable to flooding. And those that didn't get flooded, such as Middleton did, and Enniscorthy, I know, was particularly watched in horror because they had an awful, awful event at Christmas 2 years ago. And they were watching really anxiously as the water was rising. Thankfully, they were spared this time. But that brings up, you know, for other towns and villages and in Donegal too, it reminds them, not that they necessarily need reminding, but it does act as that kind of prompt to hang on, where are we with our scheme? And I was just hearing so much of that at a local level in every county that you kind of have to zoom out from the picture and say, well, hang on a second, if, you know, residents and communities in Cork are awaiting a flood scheme and they are in Wexford and they are in Donegal and they are in Louth and they are just about everywhere, really. We kind of have to take an overview on this. And what the issue is that we have no shortage of plans to protect towns and villages and communities and homes and businesses. And we've no shortage of money. It was all set aside. There was a huge exercise undertaken. It culminated in 2018 in the publication of this really extensive reports looking at flood risk all over the place, all over the country. And it prioritised sort of 118 areas that needed flood protection works. Yeah. These are considered major flood protection works. We've all sorts of little minor ones going on at local authority level, maybe to protect a couple of properties or to protect one particular road that keeps flooding and so on. Now, they're still very important, but these would be considered major flood relief schemes. There's about 118 have been identified.
Yeah.
And about 50 out of them were kind of put on the long finger, you know, so we've identified them. They are going to be important. They're slightly less urgent, so we'll look at them again at some stage in the future. The 60 odd other ones, we need to start work on pretty much straight away. And the difficulty is that of all of those, you know, very few have made much progress. And I suppose the question is to be asked, like, realistically, you know, should everybody be moving at this slow pace together? Or maybe is there a need to look at, okay, let's make a priority list of that list? And that's kind of hard to do because every county wants attention right now and every town has local politicians clamouring, mm-hmm. you know, to get this fixed right now. But it's not happening right now, that's for sure. It's a really slow process. And some of that's completely unavoidable. You know, you have to do the proper surveys and you have to devise a proper scheme. You have to talk to people and get them on board in this. You have to do the environmental surveys. But everything is really taking a long time. And some of the things that the Office of Public Works are in charge of all this are saying to me is that there's a shortage of consultants. So, you know, when they're outsourcing to the consultants to do all the environmental surveys, there's only so many of them around who have the specialist skills. When they actually eventually get to, they consider it a 5-stage process. And first of all, you have to get to stage one, and quite a number of them are not at stage one yet because they're still just doing basic surveys and data gathering, if you like. When you get to stage one, that's a very preliminary kind of design and drawings. So you get that done. Then you have to go to public consultation. And that's not just, you know, saying, you know, well, we're the experts and we're telling you this is what we want and what you need. You do need the public on board in this, because I've seen some schemes, even in Ballina, you know, when the drawings came back, people said, well, actually, you know, yes, we panicked and we want walls to protect our homes and properties. But now when they look at it and they say, well, we're going to be looking at this for 100 years, actually, we'd rather not have all walls. Is there a way of incorporating green space in that? We'd really like to protect our new cycleways or the cycleways that we've been promised. So there's all sorts of issues come into this to play. So you have to get the design right. Then it has to go to planning. And that's a really difficult issue as well. There's huge environmental consequences and implications that have to be looked at. And then you have to go to yet another round of kind of tenders and contracting out to find the engineering companies to build it. And then eventually, when it's built, it has to be proven to work before it's then handed over to become a state project. So it's a very long process. So we accept that. There's a naturally long process. But what is kind of worrying, I suppose, is just seeing so how many in 5 years on have made fairly minimal progress, despite the fact that there's money there to do it.
The reality is that at this point in time, a lot of focus on Middleton, a lot of focus on Cork at this point in time because of what happened there. It's 2 weeks since we had those devastating floods in Middleton. And there's been a huge focus on that. Now, as I said, back in 2017, there was a huge focus on Donegal and on North Inishowen in particular, because there was very severe flooding there with, you know, massive damage, Buncrana, Burntfoot and elsewhere. I mean, and at that time, the minister at the time that was in charge of it was Kevin Boxer Moran, who's actually been out of the Dáil now for over 4 years. And you know, Donegal was the big talking point in 2017. Cork's the big talking point in 2023. It could be Clonmel, it could be Ballina, it could be Carrick on Shannon, it could be Tralee next time round. And it seems that every area becomes a cause celebre for a while. And then the focus goes off it and the focus goes elsewhere. And the question really is, what happens in the interim? And the answer is, a lot of the local communities will tell you, is nothing.
Yeah, and that's to say, you know, exactly. And, you know, with some understanding, like, it was shocking what happened in Donegal in 2017. And it was shocking for what happened to people's properties and homes. And it was also shocking from a meteorological and sort of that kind of point of view. It was a really mad event, if you like. And yet we're told, well, they're not so mad anymore. We expect more of that. You know, Middleton is an example of it this time, really intense rainfall, falling huge amounts of rain in a very short space of time. And we have to expect more than that. But you're right, sort of once the cleanup happens and, you know, and people have a natural instinct to say, right, we've cleaned up, we're onwards and upwards, we get over it. you know, and we move on until the next time. And as I say, it, you know, the very real fear in Enniscorthy this time round in the last week, you know, people, it's they remember what happened, you know, 2 years ago. You move on. You have to move on. That's your home. You can't sit in floodwaters. You have to move on. You have to live there. You don't get a choice. You have to get back to business. But I mean, realistically, these things are going to recur. And it is only when you kind of zoom out from it from one particular location and realise that there's a huge amount of schemes all awaiting to be progressed all over the country. And we do tend to, I suppose, we do tend to be a bit siloed about it or concentrate on one area at one given time. But it does kind of suggest that maybe an overview needs to be maybe taken on this and just say, well, where realistically could we progress if we threw, you know, everything at, you know, towns A, B, C and D this year? Could we get them over the line? That's politically difficult, and also there's a sense of injustice about it. If people feel, well, why are they getting attention and we're not? But it maybe just looks like something like that might have to be done, because progressing, you know, dozens and dozens of schemes all at the same slow pace maybe doesn't serve anybody particularly well. And yet, at the same time, they're all deserving. You know, what's to say that a few dozen houses here, you know, is any less deserving of protection than a few dozen houses elsewhere? So it's a tricky one. I don't sort of envy them, but the reality is we're not making the progress that has been promised. And to say, a lot of these towns and villages, there's more development happening in the interim. So even the surveys that were done, you know, by 2018, you know, there's new things happening, you know, and now there's also there's discussion about whether, you know, defences and walls and barriers and all is even the way to go as part of the solution. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about if we can need to slow down, if it's going to be really intense rainfall over a short period of time and it's just that sheer gush of water, do we need to slow it down further upstream? And that's, you know, there's a lot of discussion then about, you know, how do we talk to landowners further upstream and say, you know, well, can you not plant this year? Can you not put your livestock on that land this year? That we're going to essentially designate that as a floodplain this year. How do you do that? So, I mean, it's just looking to me, I don't say there's any authority, because the plan is as it is at the minute with the OPW, and they're looking to 2030, so they're not making any rapid changes. But it does seem to me that maybe, even some of the comments of some senior politicians in the past week, that maybe a little bit of a look at the overview of this, and maybe is there just some other way of prioritising and getting some schemes over the line quicker, and also maybe looking at the combining, you know, these flood barrier type schemes with something else upstream with landowners.
We're told by climate change experts that one of the consequences of climate change in the coming years is going to be, we're going to see a lot less of what you might call that traditional soft Irish rain, where there was a little bit of rainfall and it was lovely mist on your face. And we're going to see an awful lot more of those heavy downpour deluges that have hit on so many occasions. And that's what hit Buncrana, Burnfoot, etc. That's what hit Middleton. That's what hit Enniscorthy. And there are people say to us on a regular basis here, and I'm sure it's exactly the same in Enniscorthy, and it's exactly the same in Middleton and Tralee and Carrick-on-Shannon and Ballina and wherever, where people are effectively saying, every time I see a black cloud and a thunderburst comes down, I worry. And there are people all over this country who live in almost a state of permanent worry, where the question going through their heads is this going to be the big one that gets me out of my house again?
Yeah, I mean, look, rainfall is increasing in volume. It has done over the last 30, 40 years in Ireland. So every year, there's just, if you take an overview of the entire year, there is more rain. But if it's kind of happening gradually and it's spread out over the year, that's one thing. But rainfall intensity is the really difficult thing to manage. And that's when you get this, you know, the month's worth of rain in one day. You know, even normal, if you like, you know, flood barriers will struggle with that. Normal drainage, there's been a lot of anger about drainage systems where the drain's clear, where the shore's clear in towns and villages. It's hard to do that at this time of year, because at the same time as the rain is falling, the leaves are falling, it's autumn, etc. They get blocked very quickly. So there's all of that. But that intensity is a new thing. That's, you know, that is a real difficulty. People are concerned. And we're told we're going to get more of that. So that really makes you have to look at things differently. You know, we've had a very, you know, a kind of topsy-turvy year this year so far. There was a couple of months earlier in the year when overall the country was dry, it was less rainfall than average. The last 3 months, and we're on the last day of October, so we'll probably get we'll get a summary tomorrow or the next day from Met Air, and they'll look back on October as well. But certainly July, August and September, every month, we got more rainfall than average for those months. So we have a very wet countryside at the minute. It's, you know, it's kind of a sponge that's kind of slurping around with water. And we're only at the start of winter. So, you know, even if it's a fairly normal winter for rainfall, the ground is already really soaked. And if we do get some more of these intense rainfalls, you know, it really does put riverbeds and rivers and, you know, existing sort of river banks and river walls in towns under pressure. And we have a storm on the way, we have Storm Ciarán. You know, and that's going to be difficult as well. There'll be rainfall associated with that. Now it's expected to be more Munster and sort of South Leinster, but it will affect everything. And there's kind of no getting away from it. We're facing, you know, multiple challenges, you know, and it all kind of seems to be hitting home at the same time. And it's worrying. It's worrying for people, and it's challenging for our engineers. It's challenging for the public purse, and it's challenging for policymakers.
Are government departments working well together and with local authorities? Because one of the big complaints we get from councillors, and this comes up regularly at council meetings in Donegal, is the OPW, they claim, will not meet with them. The OPW will not discuss things like the drainage of rivers, where we have councillors saying, look, we want to drain a river here, we want to drain a river there. There's things we want to do locally. We can't because the OPW won't let us. And then there's other government departments have stakes in other areas, and that department isn't talking to the other department, and the OPW isn't talking to the council. And rather than have a situation where the local authorities and the OPW and the various government departments, environment, whatever, are all working together, you have this situation where it seems they're all off on cross purposes and not talking to each other.
There is a difficulty there. There is a difficulty because, yes, you have the OPW one hand, and then you have the Department of Housing, which looks after planning on another hand. And planning is going to be hugely important, where we actually allow building and development in the near future. And then you have the Department of the Environment and Climate Action on another hand. And, you know, we are told they have this, the SOG, the Senior Officials Group, and the senior officials from all the departments will get together and, you know, and try and pull together, you know, the areas that are of common importance to all of them. But they, you know, essentially that's still, I think there's still an issue there of pulling together. I'll give you an example, and it's in Cork. Skibbereen got a flood relief scheme finished and over the line. And then a couple of years ago, it flooded badly. That was within a year or two of this new scheme. And it was the issue was teased out at an Oireachtas committee. And the problem was the OPW fully defended their brand new flood relief scheme. They said the drains were not cleared by the local authority. And it was put to them by politicians sitting on the committee, but isn't that your responsibility to make sure they're cleared? And the OPW said, no, that's the local authority. They said, OK, well, isn't it, if your flood relief scheme is dependent, part of the success of your flood relief scheme, success or failure of it, is dependent on drains being cleared by the local authority, isn't it your responsibility then to make sure the local authority cleared the drains? No, that's the local authority. So if you cannot get that kind of joined up thinking, whereby you have a state body and a local body not working, pulling together to make something work for the good of the people that they both serve, that highlights a problem. Now, I'm not saying that all the issues are as extreme as that, but there certainly is, you know, people have responsibilities for this, for that and the other. And to make them kind of always knock on the department next door to them to say, well, you know, what's your insight into this? What's your input? What's your take on this? And how do we work together? There's still a job of work to be done there. I've another story in today, and it's about coastal protection works. This is about sea level rise and loss of land to the sea from both sea level rise and from intense storms. So, and there's a decision that need, hard decisions need to be taken about how much we can protect land from literally disappearing into the sea and becoming part of the seabed, how much we can protect it and how much we have to just let it go. The policy of managed retreat. In other words, people retreat from the coastline. Yeah. Very sensitive issues. But the big thing about what the upshot of the report is that they've stressed it must be national policy, because, again, you have all different local authorities, all different agencies, planning bodies doing one thing and so on. there has to be pulling together because we have to be united in what, how we approach the public on this. I think that kind of thinking is lacking in things like these, like flood relief schemes, definitely, you know, because it often, I understand entirely when maybe local representatives say, if we could just dredge the river here, it'll increase the capacity of the river at this point to hold water. That may be a disaster. It may speed up the water and it may go down into the next county faster and it may cause problems there. So we do need joined up thinking, but we also need to listen to people when they say, well, you know, it would help us in this area. So please hear us. So the worst thing is if local politicians and representatives feel they're not being heard and they're just being dismissed simply because that's not your responsibility. People have to be thinking together and explaining why decisions are taken, because it just drives people mad otherwise. And you don't get cooperation then.
Carolyn Doherty, environmental correspondent with the Irish Independent. Time has beaten us. That was a fascinating discussion and thank you very much indeed. Just one or two comments before we go with regards to our IEFA discussion. Caller says, great to see a woman in the run for one of those positions. So many play a vital role in the background, they're not recognised. And I'm going to leave you with one final thought before we say goodbye. Watching horror films could be good for your health. Watching a scary movie releases endorphins, chemicals in the brain known for reducing stress and increasing pain tolerance. Endorphins make us feel pleasure and offer rewards. They're often released when eating or exercising. And it seems when watching A Nightmare on Elm Street or The Exorcist as well. It's a minute to 12 noon. John's up next around the Northwest. Caroline Orr produced and held my hand as always. And thanks to all who contributed. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. Back again tomorrow. Have a good day.